Every wall that exists in our modern built environment is an invitation. An open invitation to bring more beauty, delight, and connection through art into our lives. I'm Morgan, and hostess of If These Walls Could Talk. Do you know of any bare, beige walls that could use a transformation? Whether you're an artist or an art advocate, If These Walls Could Talk will glean fresh ideas and inspiration for you from in-depth interviews so that your next mural project can be a huge success.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
It is Zen, so it's green with a little bit of mint.
Sounds good.
Welcome to the second episode of If These Walls Could Talk. Today, my guest is Elise DiMarzo. She is the director of the public art program for the city of Palo Alto. She's been there in that position since 2014, but been involved with public art in Palo Alto since she was an art commissioner back in 2008. Elise both commissions and decommissions public art projects and manages the day-to-day, like budgets, policy, community outreach, and more or less handles all aspects of running their public art program. So I, with this podcast, really wanted to educate myself on the public arts process, how to get more murals made. And I think whether you're, you know, a city commissioner or an artist, there's a lot of content that Elise talks about that's going to be relevant. For example, navigating the fine line of engaging community in public art so the artwork is site-specific and relevant while avoiding design by committee. That's always something I've had a hard time navigating. And also, we're going to talk about the trend of including a selfie moment in mural art, whether murals should be considered temporary or permanent art, and why mural art is one of the most litigious types of art to get made. And I really wanted to keep each episode under 30 minutes, but with Elise, I felt like there was so much useful content that I broke it into two episodes. So the second episode has more information specifically for artists, including how the city of Palo Alto supports the arts community and develops public artists from studio work to public art, and also how the city runs their artist selection process and why they actually prefer to work with local artists. So that's more in the second episode. As an aside, Elise happens to sound strikingly like Terry Gross, which makes the whole podcast sound more professional than it might actually be. Honestly, we were just sitting in my van drinking tea as I embark on trying to educate myself and you, dear listener, about the ins and outs of public art making. Our interview is interspersed with beautiful music spontaneously created by pianist Tatanka Bricka. So without further ado, here we go.
Yeah. And cheers. Thank you. I just want to really thank you for doing this and taking this leap.
Of course, I'm happy to. Thank you for having me.
It's so cool.
You know, I think there's this perception from people who are not in the field who think, arts administrators, so what, you shop for art all the time? It's like, no, it's really bringing the community together, working with artists who have a high quality of their artwork, but also understand being in a specific community and listening to their needs and doing something specific for them without it being designed by committee. Really understanding the needs of that community and having the artistic integrity to hold what makes them great and what makes them unique, but also that they've done something special for that community.
Wow. So what I just heard was incredible. It sounds like there's so much sort of trust and expectation for really an artist to be both responsive, lead with sort of a vision,
mm-hmm.
and be responsive to the community. That's what I heard.
Being responsive, but without having it fall into design by committee. And it's a really hard line. And that's, you know, that's a lot of what I do is trying to create space for the artist and trying to, you know, manage expectations from the community. But at the same time, you know, working with the artist about, okay, how can we address some of these concerns or work some of this history of this place in this neighborhood into the artwork in a way that fits with their art. Mm-hmm. So it's wow. It's always an interesting journey, and every public artwork is different, and every artist processes that differently. And so it's really an amazing thing to get to be in my position and listening to the community, understanding the stakeholders, and working with each individual artist. And we get really close and we have really deep conversations and what's really meaningful and what's coming from the artist and what's from the community and what gets reflected in the art, but not necessarily in a way that the community might expect. And so it's every artwork is an interesting journey. They take years to come about.
Not just the fabrication, that's the approval, selection.
It's the design development, you know, in that whole process. And then, yeah, the fabrication is its own wild journey as well.
Okay, you just opened up like a dozen questions for me.
Sure.
It seems like, you know, you have selection, and I want to talk about that.
Sure.
Art advocacy. The logistics of fabrication and mm-hmm. creating a piece that's robust enough to withstand the timeline that you want to create for it. Let's start with a context, because mm-hmm. Palo Alto is super interesting mm-hmm. because of the rapid culture change.
Yes.
It's not one thing. It's just changed so much. So mm-hmm. how are you creating artwork for all the variety of community, knowing you really can't please everybody with any given piece? How do you?
Well, and that's a great point. So the collection, it's not my collection. I'm not playing curator. It's the community's collection. So I don't like everything in the collection, and I shouldn't, because it's not mine. But each commission really engages that community. And no, you're not going to please everyone, because if you do, you've gone into that design by committee thing. But you've created a discussion and you've reached some sort of consensus about what the mission of that artwork is, whether or not everybody buys into how that is reflected, is another issue. But we involve the community in the artist selection. We bring the community in to inform the artist. What's special about this community? What's the history here? What are the, you know, what are the real nodes of warmth and of connectivity here? And what are some of the, you know, the hippos in the water that the artist should know about, not, mm-hmm. you know, accidentally agitate or step into?
And when you do community engagement, mm-hmm. how do you get a cross section? Because it seems like the people that have the time to show up to a city council meeting mm-hmm. or might be overly represented by people who have time to complain, and underrepresented by progressive thinking professional mm-hmm. cohorts that actually care about the art in their community but can't necessarily be as involved in the process.
Right. That's a great question. It's always a delicate balance, but we do involve, when we have a selection panel, there are members from the community who are part of that. Generally, we try and select people who do have some sort of design background, architect, landscape architect, some sort of creative field. So it helps them understand that when we do a panel, we're looking at previous work. So mm-hmm. we're not looking at proposals that have been proposed for that site, but looking at the skill set of the artist and the way they engage with the space. And is that the type of artist who's going to be suitable for that community and that commission? And so then you've already got some built-in advocates for the project. And then you send the artist, you know, before they've started their design process, out to the community and say, come, we want a listening session. We want to hear what's important about this community. What are some of the amazing things about this space? What's the history?
So when you mean community, you mean like within 5 square blocks of where the art will go. You identify the site, and there's somebody on the, you have an arts commission that's chosen for an arts background.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one person will sort of be heading up a certain project from that commission. So they might have pet not pet projects, but individual, you know, in this area, I'm going to sort of manage this or be a liaison for this community. Mm-hmm. And then when you say community, because Palo Alto is 65,000.
It is. So those community mm-hmm. meetings are open to anyone because you can't just limit it to the people who live there. There are people who may go there because they do Tai Chi at 6 o'clock on Thursday mornings. There are people who have attachments to these spaces for whatever reason. So they're open full community meetings. And it's interesting, you know, the diversity of people. Some will say, I live across the street, so I'm really invested in it. Another people will say, I walk through this park or I'm here because my kids play soccer here every Saturday, but I live across town. So you really can't limit it that way. It's public space. People are passionate about those spaces for all different reasons.
And art advocates mm-hmm. care deeply, and they're way out here. And mm-hmm. it seems like we are all about, like, new is mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. We like new. Would you agree that there's? I'm pointing to a graph that shows the spectrum of the attitudes towards art making. There's 5 to 10% of the population that just doesn't want any change, nothing new. I don't want a new.
And they tend
roundabout.
To be very vocal. Yeah, they tend to be some of the most vocal people in the community. And I think some of that is because there's so much change as far as development and the population change.
Already.
That, yeah, it makes people really change averse here. And so mm-hmm. it's something that we do have to be really sensitive to. A good example is we just completed a temporary installation out at the Baylands with a couple of artists known as Watershed Sculpture. And when we first brought up to the Bayland stakeholders this idea of doing temporary public art out there, of course, their first thought was, we're going to put giant red steel sculpture out in the middle of that beautiful view corridor. And part of the intent of doing that entire project was to help that community understand that the definition of public art has moved far beyond that, and that having some sort of environmental project, which was completely in line with the plans they have for the future of Bixby, is also public art. And so some of those, you know, the initial feedback we got was, I won't say negative, but very dubious and hesitant about, mm-hmm. you know, what are you doing out there? I really don't know about this. Mm-hmm. And the way we set it up was we had community members come work alongside the artists for, I think it was 3 weekends in a row. And we called that the open house. We don't have to have other community meetings. We invite the public to come out during those 7 hours. The artists are going to be out there and come talk to them. Come see what we're doing. Come talk to them. Get to know them. And it was amazing. A lot of people who came who were very skeptical about this process came out and were completely converted. They started weaving sticks with us. They were advocates mm-hmm. for the project. They started documenting, you know, creatures that they were seeing start to live there. And of course, on the final day, we actually had a burrowing owl turn up, which was one of the goals of the project to try and attract them. So hopefully that they'll nest. So it was almost on cue. It's almost too good. But I've checked with all of my staff and my friends, and nobody released an owl at that opportune moment.
So that brings up a good point, that engagement is so important.
It's critical.
But like as an artist, I'm always trying to walk a fine line between wanting to keep the art professional and mm-hmm. an engagement. So when I go to a sixth grade class and I say, let's design a mural, they're going to say, we want a tiger and a sun and a house, you know, or it's going to be
rainbow.
And a rainbow. And it's like, how do I both engage them? And if they start painting, drips, and it's not going to last as long. And so it's like mm-hmm. how to create engagement. And this also reminds me, it's good feedback for you too. Mm-hmm. I asked a previous interviewee, Ryan McKee, what his favorite piece of artwork that has made impact on him and why was. Uh-huh. He talked about the tree in front of the courthouse mm-hmm. and how he was involved in that project of putting the leaves on. Do you know what I'm talking about?
In front of City Hall? Aurora. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Aurora. That was a piece of art that impacted him most in his life because he was involved with
yes.
it.
Yes.
I mean, and I hear it time and again, when people have a chance to be involved, it makes an impact. How do you create project engagement and keep the quality of art high and the quality of ideas without design by committee, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the dance I was referring to earlier. It's really tricky. You really have to find artists that engage public in different ways, whether that's through the community meetings and they feel invested because they gave input that helped drive the concept that the artist came up with. Or if it's, you know, like the Blue Trees Project, you know, Constantine Demopoulos had armies of volunteers turn up who wanted to work on the project and just loved being part of it. So it can be the community physically helping the artist or working alongside the artist, but it can also be the community helping shape what kind of artwork is appropriate for that site. And that's how you build that advocacy and that ownership.
Mm-hmm. Another gimmick. I feel like it's a gimmick, but I'm starting to do more murals mm-hmm. where people can take selfies of themselves and post on Instagram and there's some integrated moment.
The Instagrammable public art. It's a real thing and cities want that selfie spot. I mean, I see it all over the place. Mm-hmm.
It's helping drive demand for mural art.
Yeah.
I think it's behind the whole explosion of mural art. And so it's part of, and actually, you know, for junior high, they wanted a selfie moment. And I was like, you know, the point of art here is to build a sense of community within the junior high schoolers.
Right.
Taking photos of themselves in front of their school mural and sending it to their friends at the school is absolutely meeting that criteria.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, to take a selfie of yourself at your school is a point of pride. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, wait. There's so many
there's a
directions
lot.
Heading out right here, but I just want to go back to make mm-hmm. a point, which is, so, you know, you talked about the Baylands Project and how the I don't want anything, that there's some people who are just change averse and that could even be a demographic that's growing because of all the change already upheaval going mm-hmm. on within Palo Alto.
Absolutely.
So that could be going from 10 to 20%. And then the second lukewarm group I put is there's a lot of people that just don't notice, don't care. Mm-hmm. And I would even say that group is growing because they're the people who are absorbed on their phones or less engaged in their environment. I mean, mm-hmm. as humans, I feel like technology is disengaging us from our immediate environment. Yeah. And that public art is a huge opportunity to bring our immediate environments alive rather than being putty colored neutral spaces.
Yeah. Shake it up a little.
Shake it up. But that is probably also growing. So you have a larger population that is actually eating away at the, I love art. I love this in the public space, right? Do you mm-hmm. think that's possible?
I think one way to address a lot of that, the people who either don't notice, don't care, or change averse, and to wake people up and get them off their phones, is temporary public art. You can do things that are more shocking, bold, out there, and like it or hate it, it's going away in 6 months or a year. But a lot of the time what we find, and Aurora was one of those projects, it's temporary, but people tend to fall in love with it. And so when it goes, they want to know, okay, so what's next? What's next? And the beautiful thing is that that's happened on King Plaza now in front of City Hall is people get really excited about what's the next installation,
cool.
which is a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And one final point about the graph is mm-hmm. that my experience is that most people, once they see and experience a work of art, on the whole, people are happy to have it. And mm-hmm. it's like there's just usually this small percentage of sore thumbs, but people in general feel a benefit mm-hmm. from art. Like overall, there's an overwhelming majority that yes. are easy to please and yes. love it. Mm-hmm. Right. That is a point too. Mm-hmm. I don't want to overlook that. art as a forever experience.
Mm-hmm.
You have to curate it and preserve it forever and ever. I actually think one of the beautiful things about murals is it's so easy to paint over. They go out of style. They go out of date. There's a new, fresh expression.
Mm-hmm.
And that the short time frame actually enhances the sense of specialness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about how you decide about time frame. Tell me about that.
It's a conversation that's very top of mind for Palo Alto. As you know, we've got some great Greg Brown murals that were, you know, begun in the 70s. Some of them are aging. You've helped us to preserve some of them and do some touch-ups. But over time, we'll start to lose Greg's hand there. And at some point, it doesn't probably make sense to continue to preserve them, and they will get lost over time. And when he painted them, he never thought of them as forever. So we've photographed them so that if there was a need to, we could reproduce them in some sort of vinyl if we wanted to.
But it is
a tough discussion, you know, letting go of those. And he was also such a key personality in this community. But letting go is hard. And we do recognize that some of those, they will get lost over time as these projects get redeveloped. So murals are not forever. And that is a discussion. We haven't really had to let go of them intentionally in Palo Alto yet, but we will.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be hard.
Yeah. But it also encourages more
new opportunities.
New opportunities.
And that's the thing, is we're always getting this feedback. You know, and the commission really wants to do murals, and can we have things that are more dynamic? And, you know, the downtown business group has approached me. We want to do a big mural. We want that selfie moment downtown. You know, we are working on getting a murals policy together, because those agreements are really challenging, because most of those murals are not on city property, but would be on private property. And so if we're going to utilize city funds in part or in whole to commission something, how do we guarantee that it won't get painted over, or if the building is sold, that it doesn't get painted over immediately?
Mm-hmm.
Legally, murals are actually one of the stickiest things that we deal with, of all the crazy things.
I'm actually, as an artist, more pro, like, look, it's temporary, and it's the client, they can paint over whenever they want, you know, because also it's a job for me.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a company in San Francisco called Minted. They hired me out to paint the whole front of their building.
Yeah,
and 2 years later,
that.
I painted a whole new mural on top of my old mural.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, but then
does
I
it make
like,
you a little, it must make you a little sad to let go of them, Morgan?
A little bit. But I'll tell you what, actually, the first one I really liked. And I have photos of it, and I incorporated it into my new design for the podcast. It's on my website, and I'm still sending it to people like, hey, do you like this idea? And people say, yeah, I love that idea. And so it still exists as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, on the actual building, it's only half its life, or a fraction of its life, if people see it, as when if it's actually a really good design, and me getting paid 1 year and then getting paid again to paint it helps keep me in business and my ideas refining and my skills growing, and those ideas don't go away. So in retrospect, I'm like, when can I paint over this one and do another one? But it's
yeah,
a
but
moment
that's,
I had
you.
To sit with it. Yeah.
But that's also if it's you. What if they had offered, you know, a different artist to come in? Because part of the idea of changing out murals is spreading the love. There are a lot of very talented muralists around. And I don't know, like, have you had one of your big murals painted over or commissioned for another artist?
That hasn't happened to me yet, but you're absolutely
You have a
right.
lot of work out there. I mean, at some point it's going to happen, and I'm just curious to see how you'll feel about that, because I know it's hard.
So many walls that need to get painted. There's so many great art. As there's more money in it, the art gets better. The art has been getting way better in murals.
The competition is amazing. So we just did our open call to artists, and I think we had 400 some odd apply, and a lot of muralists, tons of muralists. And I want to commission all of them. They also have to be mindful of the fact that, A, we don't have that much money. And B, you don't want to create visual chaos too. You have to be really mindful of the surrounding environment and how many things you commission. I mean, I love seeing murals everywhere, but it's not necessarily appropriate in most of the Palo Alto settings.
Yes. Well, actually, Palo Alto is unique in that it has a lot of beautiful buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the downtown, the buildings are made with beautiful materials. A lot of communities, they have plain stucco, hardly a balcony,
mm-hmm.
a lot of blank walls, even mm-hmm. half industrial, that could be completely turned around by a mural. So in some ways, Palo Alto is not the prime candidate for mural art.
Well, there are a number of walls. You think about, for instance, downtown, there are quite a few backs of the buildings that face those parking lots that I would just love to commission some artwork there, because it just, it looks like the backside of a building. Mm-hmm. A mural would really activate that space in a much more positive way.
Okay, I can see right away this is going to be a two-part podcast. Because I really wanted to keep them under a half hour, and this is not happening.